Welcome to New Books and Biography. I'm Oline Eden. Today I'm going to be talking with Meryl Seacrest about her new book, Elsa Schiaparelli, A Biography. Hi, Meryl. Thank you so much for joining us for New Books and Biography. One of the interesting things in doing these interviews is that we get writers in such different stages of their careers and from such different fields. So I wonder if you could start out by telling us a bit about your amazing career and how you got started in journalism, and then from there, how you began writing biographies.
Gosh, that's quite a big order. Let's make it brief. My parents and I was born in England, as you probably know, and grew up in Bath in Somerset. And my parents and I emigrated to Canada when I was 18. And I started in journalism at the age of 19, working for a very small paper, learned as I went along, slowly worked my way up to a decent newspaper, larger newspapers. I ended up at the Washington Post and was there for officially and unofficially about 15 years. While I was there, I started doing profiles of people. It was in the days when the profile interview was something of a special form all by itself. It's fallen into some kind of disuse, which is a shame, really. But I enjoyed it. I got a lot of interesting assignments, including people like Kenneth Clark, the British art historian, Salvador Dali. I didn't write about Frank Lloyd Wright's The Post, but I ended up doing a book about him. And really, people in the arts, in theater, in a lot in art, a lot in the art market, art dealing. So that became a particular interest of mine. And eventually, I got always wanted to write fiction, wrote a book that nobody wanted to publish. And then I found something that was fiction all by itself. And really, it was a life of a very interesting minor American painter who lived her life in Europe. So here am I, a transplanted English woman now living in America, and she was an American who made her reputation in France, in Italy. So it was sort of a natural for me, and her life was really like the Victorian horror story. It was a really terrible life. So I took a chance on it, and it did pretty well with it, and left the Washington Post, took up biography full-time. That was 40 years ago. So my latest book is my 11th in 40 years. Wow. So, you know, people say, you're a journalist, and I say, I think I've graduated to being a biographer at this point.
So what drew you to Schiaparelli as a biographical subject? I know that she's sort of moving in the milieu with a lot of the other people that you've written
about.
Was it that?
Yeah. Well, there were two reasons, really. All these things get done in a kind of funny way. I did a book on Salvador Dali in 1985, and it was just at the time when people were discovering all the fakes and he painted, and he'd been in a fire, and it was a kind of a fast book. You know, I raced to France and Spain and did a lot of work on that very fast news reporting. The book came out the next year. It was a quick book, but it made a lot of money and was translated into a lot of languages. So I guess you could say that was really my first bestseller. And in the process of writing about Dali, I first heard about Elsa Schiaparelli and the kinds of clothes that she had designed and how original she was and how much of a surrealist she was. And it's, her name stuck in my mind. So eventually, you know, years and years go by and I'm thinking about this woman and I'm thinking, well, she's a dress designer mostly, but there's more than that to her. She's also an artist. And I have been working for the last 25 years with the same editor. So that's really the second aspect of what I do, because I can't really write a book unless my editor likes it too. And she works for Knopf, so it's a house you wouldn't want to leave, you know, all kinds of things. And I was talking to her about Schiaparelli, and she said, oh, yes, she said, I've always wanted to do a book about Schiaparelli. So it was just one of those situations, you know. It's one of those things that life is telling you, I think there's an opportunity here. So that's why I did it.
Mm-hmm. And I loved the story, too, about the museum exhibit catalog and using that, because museum exhibits are sort of a fleeting, transient thing that if you miss them...
Yes, this
is kind of a way of pulling that into a concrete book, and then connecting that to the life. I thought that was a really fascinating connection there.
Yes, well, it was very interesting because the curator for that show, which was put on by the Philadelphia Museum of Art 12 years ago now, was Dilys Blum. And we talked, she's an American, but it turned out that she, you know, Dilys is a Welsh name, don't you know? So we got very friendly, and I asked Dilys why she hadn't written a biography of Elsa Schiaparelli while she was at it. And I think that it just didn't suit her temperament. And she found out some things she didn't like. She was very concerned about what Elsa was doing during World War II, which, of course, is a long time ago now. But on the other hand, you know, you've always got to think about the family. How would the family feel if some very unpleasant news was discovered about your subject? And Dilys was in an awkward situation. She was putting on a big show. She needed everyone's cooperation, I guess. So she decided she wasn't going to do it. But she was very sweet about it, and she said, and she would help me. So, you know, that again is the kind of thing that you always hope for in biography. Once upon a time, I could call someone up and say, this is Meryl Seacrest calling. I'm with the Washington Post, and I'd like to interview you. And when I left the paper, I'd have to say, this is Meryl Seacrest calling, and they'd say, Meryl Seacrest, who, you know, because I didn't have a big name behind me. So it gets ever so much harder to do a part when nobody knows who you are. So I guess you could say it was just dumb luck, really. Mm-hmm. And you always have to, if you're a biography, you have to look and say, is there something in print already? And there really wasn't much. There was her memoir, which had been, no, that's been written 60 years ago now. The V&A, by the way, did a reprint not very long ago. And it's a good book as far as it goes, but memoirs, you know.
Yes.
Memoirs are memoirs. They tell you what your subject, the subject wants you to know, not necessarily what happened. Mm-hmm. And there was another book called, I'm blanking on the name anyway, Empress of Fashion, mm-hmm. which was a very good book, but was also not a particularly reliable one because it was entirely based on the memoir of Elsa's only child, mm-hmm. Gogo, and that wasn't very reliable anyway, as it turned out. So that was fun because, you know, as a biography, you really don't want to be how should I say this, just rewriting someone else.
Right.
You want to have an original contribution, and if you're not going to have an original contribution, why write the book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So there are all kinds of factors having to do with why you would take a particular subject. It's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. I get asked that. What subject do you want to do next? And isn't it wonderful you can choose any subject you want? And the answer to that is, no, you can't.
Yes, you can't. I think they'd rather pick you.
Oh, dear. It's fun. It's always fun. And it's always a voyage. And the fun part is doing the investigating. And the hard part is sitting down and writing it.
Amen. You mentioned the unreliability of memoir, and I think that's so interesting when biographers engage with that and really dig into the, and I think you do an interesting job, especially at the beginning, where you're kind of unpacking stories that Schiaparelli wrote, and then saying, well, actually, it probably happened like this instead, and positing different versions of it. And that's so, as a reader, that really adds a complexity to your understanding of the biographical subject, rather than just taking their words and throwing them back at you.
Well, you know, I'm so glad you said that. I think I've loved biography, and I've read it all my life and really adored it. But I have discovered that biographers tend to have a point of view, and they will support that point of view with evidence, certain evidence, and perhaps sometimes withhold other evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't terribly like that way of doing things. I've never really liked it. I wrote about a very, essentially very unsympathetic subject my first time around, Romaine Brooks, who was in many ways kind of an impossibly difficult person. And I was very, very concerned that I would be giving the wrong, that people wouldn't like this subject matter, you know. But it's, feature writing is quite different from writing a book. And one of the most interesting things about feature writing is you really do have to take a kind of point of view and sustain it through 3,000 words or whatever it is. But if you're doing a book, well, I've done pretty big manuscripts, you know, 150,000 words. And if and that's a bigger painting, and I end up thinking of it visually, and you can put in a lot of detail in that big picture that you can't do with a small work. And if you are perfectly faithful to everything you have learned, it turns out all right. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
The same thing happened with Bernard Berenson, who isn't a very good subject either, really. But with Romaine, I got this kind of capsule thing, story of an indomitable woman who rose above her handicaps, you know, and I'm thinking, is it? I never knew I'd written that. So there we are, you know. But I think that the same is true of Frank Lloyd Wright. Oh, I love the subject of Frank Lloyd Wright. I would write it again tomorrow if I had the energy. It is divine. It's like Balzac. It's the great American life. You know, it's a genius. It's fire. It's murder. It's arson. It's poverty. It's jail. I mean, it's incredible, that life. And it goes on for 97 years, you know. Oh, dear. That was the great American life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the subject I most enjoyed writing about. When I came to the end, I thought, I wouldn't mind starting all over again. So that just shows you how crazy I am.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. I always want the reader to do that with a book. I never thought about doing that as a writer.
Well, you know, it's it's telling a story, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah.
I'll tell you something that I haven't told anybody ever, and that was when I was a little girl, I used to, well, all little girls love stories,
mm-hmm.
but I like to tell stories. And when I was in kindergarten, at the end of the afternoon, the teacher would say, would you like to come and tell the story to me?
Oh, wow.
And I would go and tell a story to my class, and every day was a different story. And I'd just start, and I would see the story unfolding, you know, sort of on a stage. And I just talk about what I saw. And apparently the children loved it, because every day I used to tell a story. And I lost, when I started going into puberty, I lost it.
Mm-hmm.
It went.
Oh,
so I couldn't invent stories anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when I turned to other people's stories.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. Did you find Schiaparelli a difficult person to write about? Was she difficult and
yes.
evasive?
Mm-hmm. Yes, she is. She's a difficult person. We can't know her very well
mm-hmm.
because she didn't really write, well, she must have written letters, but I darn if I could find any. And she didn't have a diary. That's what you hope for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be bliss.
Yeah.
I've only ever had it once before, and gosh, it does. You really feel you know a person when you read their diaries.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that you don't. But, you know, nobody writes diaries anymore.
Yeah.
That's the thing of it. So I had to put together a picture of her in my mind based on what she had said
mm-hmm.
in her memoir, and based on what she did, and the people who had known her. Of course, you know, now there aren't so many left alive who did. And the only other person who was very, very helpful was a woman whom she had used as her kind of second in command,
mm-hmm.
an American girl named Bettina Shaw Jones,
mm-hmm.
who, as you know, probably know, having read my book, came from Long Island. She was Long Island socialite. And Bettina was the chronicler. Bettina
mm-hmm.
was the compulsive letter writer and diarist. And I'd known Bettina. I met her years ago in Paris and adored her. She was a wonderful person. Marvelous, marvelous original mind. And so when I knew that I was going to be writing about Schiaparelli, I thought, this is just great. I'll just use Bettina's diaries,
yeah.
which are now at Yale and so on, and not with as much as I'd hoped for.
There never is.
could not figure out what her writing was. It was hideous. Kenneth Carr tells this great story about a friend of his. Her name was Sybil Colfax, and she was a great hostess, and she would write postcards. She'd write 20 postcards between 8 and 9 every morning, and most of them were, do come and have lunch with me, do come and have dinner. But every once in a while, she'd write a postcard to the librarian at the London Library, which was a quasi-private institution, and she would ask for a book. And then the librarian would look at her writing, couldn't make head or tail of it, and he'd put it up on a bulletin board behind him, and every once in a while he'd take a fast look at it to see whether all these scribbles had fallen into place or not. Never did. Well, that was what I was trying to do with Bettina. I'd go back to my digs, and I'd look at it mainly. What? Oh dear, that was such a pity. So I got bits of it.
Mm-hmm. What you got was amazing, because she has a great wry voice that's really, really fun to read.
She's wonderful. She really is. And she tells marvelous stories.
Mm-hmm.
I love her story.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there we are. So that's what I did, and it was a very interesting. The reaction was very interesting because the book was reviewed by several fashion editors, and that was sad because fashion editors really aren't very interested in fashion history. They're not fashion historians. They're not looking for broad trends. They're not looking for social implications. Yeah. They're really only interested in what did you do yesterday, or the day before yesterday. When I was a journalist, I used to come into the office in the morning, and I'd have a story on the front page of the Star section, which was where I worked. And my editor would say, half joking to me, "That was a great story you did for us this morning, Meryl, but what have you done for us lately?" You know, and fashion editors are the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're only interested in what happened 5 minutes ago, and having written it, it's dead as far as they're concerned. So you can imagine the reaction with Schiaparelli. Nobody was interested in Schiaparelli. But the people who were interested, very interesting, was the newspaper side, the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. Financial Times, and The Economist. You know, you wouldn't think they'd be interested in Schiaparelli, but they were. It was fascinating stuff. And the other people who are interested are young students of fashion. Mm-hmm. Now that blew my mind. I lectured at the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York, mm-hmm. and those are all students of fashion. And they couldn't get enough of this story. They were mesmerized by it. They did something that I've never had happen to me before, and it's a little unnerving. When I was signing books, they were kind of touching me, you know? And they wanted to know about the brooch I was mm-hmm. wearing, which was a Schiaparelli brooch. It was quite far into my experience. I had that the other night, too. Mm-hmm. Women audiences love this story because, first of all, it's a story. Yeah. I mean, this is somebody who battled against the odds. She was an amazing figure in the mm-hmm. 30s. How do you get there? Well, you don't get there just by sleeping with people. Of right. course, I suppose that helps, you know, but you've got to have a lot of talent.
Yeah.
She was extraordinary, and she survived World War II the way very practical people did. She played the game the way she thought it had to be played, and somehow she kept her business and she kept her house, you know. And mm-hmm. and at the end of her career, she lost her way, that's for sure. But she wasn't really into Dior, mm-hmm. you know. Dior wanted women to sit on pillows and wear hats and gloves and things, you know. And that was not Elsa.
No.
That was not our Elsa. She was quite something else.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of fun with her. I thought she was a wonderful figure, and I tried very hard to put her in the context of her age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something else that doesn't always happen in the biography.
Right.
I am looking at her with the eyes of a modern-day woman. Mm-hmm. I can't help it. But that doesn't mean that I have to imagine her in the context of 2015. No, I should be imagining her in the context of 1919, 1925, 1936. You know, I should somehow get myself back into thinking about those historical periods.
Yeah.
and how she would react. And that does help, you know. If you can imagine. And anyone who's writing about the 60s and 70s, you know, which I experienced, I reported every day for the Washington mm-hmm. Post, needs to see that the person in that context. And there's nothing that works better than just reading old newspapers, you know.
Exactly.
It's so funny, though, because I think in a story like this one, reading it as a modern reader, it's still kind of shocking in our own context for someone to be this successful and work that hard and to have this story of this amazing woman. So then when you project it back 70 or 80 years, it's triply shocking that she was really able to do so much. And her, especially because her clothes seem so modern to this day. And there are these, the innovation of the exposed zipper and the wrap dresses, which we have now.
And don't you love, I just love the mouth that turns out to be a pocket. Mm-hmm. I just think that is so clever. she was always challenging assertions, mm-hmm. which makes her an artist, I think, yes. because that's what artists do. They're always trying to get us to look at things with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. And she certainly did that. Well, I'm so glad you think her stuff is still modern. No fashion editors don't.
I think it's amazing.
Well, what do they know?
Yes. Well, we're all shopping at H&M. If we could be wearing extraordinary fabrics like that, it would be amazing.
This is true.
Yes, I think you say at the beginning of your book that everybody wants to look the same, and at the time they didn't, and it was to look casual and yet completely frivolous.
Yes.
I think that's wonderful, and to look comfortable doing it. To have a pocket for your flask in your ball gown.
Yes, oh, isn't that fun? People absolutely always roar with laughter when I tell them that one.
So as a last question, you mentioned that there are some unknowns about her, things that we just can't be sure of. And I wondered, as a biographer, how do you handle the unknowns that remain?
Well, you know, I have come to terms with it. It used to drive me crazy. And I used to try to cross every T and dot every I. And I remember one time when I was working on Bernard Berenson, and I was very much interested in the importance of his Lithuanian Jewish background in the context of who he became and what he did. And his parents emigrated to Boston, and they were there in very humble circumstances, and he managed to get free education because he was such a clever boy. But it was very important to me to know how seriously I should take the fact that his father and mother were Orthodox. Mm-hmm. And so I, one day, I discovered that Berenson had never taken his bar mitzvah, and I rushed up to my husband, who works at home too, and I said, and he'd gone to Harvard, and Berenson went to Harvard, mm-hmm. and you know, all kinds of things like that. So he was monitoring my progress very closely, and I rushed up to him and said, "Darling, I've just discovered that Berenson never took his bar mitzvah." And he looked at me in such a kind way, you know, that I knew I'd gone too far. He really didn't care whether Berenson took his bar mitzvah or not. So that has kind of influenced me ever since, to look for the relevant anecdote and not to try to throw it all in, because you're probably just going to bore your reader to death.
Yes, I have learned that the hard way too.
Yeah, so to get back to your question, in the end you have to, even if you knew absolutely everything about your subject, and I came pretty close to knowing everything about Frank Lloyd Wright, you then have to look at it all and say, how can I turn this into a narrative? Mm-hmm. And some things you just have going to have to get rid of because they don't fit.
Yeah.
And there are other things that you're just going to have to say to your reader one way or the other, I don't know. Mm-hmm. With my first subject, Romaine Brooks, she, in her memoir, she says that she became pregnant, she was raped and became pregnant, and had a child, which she gave to a convent. Well, I would have liked to have used that. Mm-hmm. And I do quote her as having said that, but I then have to tell my reader that I could not find any evidence of this child.
Yeah.
Or any proof that she ever had it. So was she just embellishing the story about her? She tended to see herself as ill-used anyway, don't you see?
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't really be sure. So I have had to say, I don't know. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Not at all. I think it's really important.
So there we are. I hope I've helped you a bit. It's actually great fun to talk about biography because it's really quite a fascinating business to
yes.
find out about somebody's life. And then what do you do with it, you mm-hmm. know? And how do you phrase it and how do you make it? How do you make it interesting for your reader, which is essentially, you know, what I do?
Yeah.
There are many different kinds of biographies, many ways of doing things. There is the chronicle, and if it's a chronicle, that's a different kind of book.
Mm-hmm.
But and then there's the scholarly approach, and you know, I write for a general audience, so I'm looking at it rather differently. I'm always hoping that my reader will turn the page. And I think that's a good thing to think about.
Yes, definitely.
Are you boring your reader? Am I being boring? To get back to my poor husband. So I haven't mentioned Berenson's bar mitzvah to him ever since. Well, listen, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for joining me. I've been talking today with Meryl Seacrest about her new book, Elsa Schiaparelli, A Biography. I'm Oline Eaton. This is New Books in Biography. Thanks for listening.